We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, the Nets suffered another loss tonight, 125-113 to the Cleveland Cavaliers again. How are we feeling, Jack?
Not great, Nick. Not great, Bob.
Yeah, it was honestly a pretty pitiful performance. You know, just not much effort in a lot of areas, including defense, rebounding, transition, whatever you want to say. Offensively, they're able to do some nice things, but it didn't really matter at the end of the day. But before we get into it, as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com, netsrepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, I mean, where do we start? We start with the effort, right? Because there wasn't any of that tonight.
There was zero effort, Nick. And I said to you off wax that effort is a skill, and effort makes up for talent. And a lot of the time, effort beats talent. And effort has beaten talent two games in a row. And the Brooklyn Nets have shown little to no effort. They've relied on their talent. They've relied on just that end of the floor. And there's been moments and spurts of it, but you can't give 2 minutes of effort in a 48-minute game against a team that has been feisty and has been incredible defensively and has a lot of, like, underrated talent, really good defensive schemes as well. Coach has is just feisty in so many different ways. And look, they deserve to win, and they deserve to win both games. There is no way in the world that the Brooklyn Nets deserve to win this game when you play one side of the floor and just can't execute as a team at all defensively.
Yeah, and I think it's even more frustrating is the fact they played this same team. And they knew this team is feisty, and they play with effort, and they have some talented players. And two of their former players that, you know, played well against them again tonight. So it's like, how do you not come out with a better effort and a better plan to beat this team? And, like, the Cavs are a solid team. They're not one of the best teams in the league. They're a chance to be a playoff team, a play-in team. The Nets are substantially more talented, even with a shorthanded roster, even without Kevin Durant. And, like you said, just – the effort wasn't there, and the Cavs just constantly outplayed them. Just there was that one possession in the third quarter where it felt like they got five offensive rebounds on one possession.
Yeah, that third quarter, Nick, was probably where it was done. 20-5 run the Cavs had. They were, when the Nets were up at one stage, and it seemed like, okay, there's some momentum swinging here, and then the Nets just switch off. You can't give away a 20-5 run to anyone, like, to let alone to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were the worst team in the NBA, were averaging like 99 points, and they had 99 points through like three quarters against us. You know, we've given up two of the highest scores probably that they've had this season, yep. Both against the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, the Nets are continuing in the downward trajectory defensively, and there's a lot of work to be done there, and we can communicate about that in a little bit. But that 20-5 run, Nick, is emblematic of effort, because you can have like 7-0 runs here or there, you could have a 9-0 run, but 20-5, that's just like, all right, let's just try and get some points. Let's just try and get some stops. But there's just no execution, no effort, no communication. It's frustrating. There's a way to go, and we don't want to overreact to a small sample size of these two games, especially this one, you know, especially when you don't have the best player in the league playing for you, your best defender, as you alluded to as well, Nick, and your best offensive player, and probably the best player in the league, many could argue. But still, you have enough talent on this roster from 1 to 10 to get the job done, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, and I think the 20 to 5 run too, Jack, is like, you have Kyrie Irving and James Harden. That should literally never happen. If your offense is struggling that much, call a damn ISO. Call a damn pick and roll for that specific player to go and score or figure something out. And like you mentioned, Jack, the Cavs are not a great offensive team. And I'll say this. Most of my reaction tonight is not long-term or, you know, my expectations for the team. I'm upset with this one-game sample size. You know, the effort level tonight that they showcased in a game that, not that they needed to win, but they just lost to this team, and you want to set the tone for the season and continue to build those championship habits, and they're really not doing that, you know, tonight or, you know, over these last two games. And it's frustrating because a lot of work still has to be done for this team to win a championship. The talent is there, and on paper everything looked great. But you still have to do it. You know what I mean? It still has to be done. And really, every minute matters because it's another rep that you can get. And we saw last year with the Clippers, they didn't get enough reps, and it hurt them in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that we need to use these games as ways to get our habits on point, build those championship habits, as Kevin Durant alluded to last season before the Kenny Atkinson firing. Right now, there don't seem to be a lot of championship habits. You know, you don't win games by just talent alone. You can't talent your way to a championship. No team has ever done that. Whether you're the Miami Heat, the Chicago Bulls, the Boston Celtics, the Golden State Warriors, for that matter, they have good, sound principles.
Yep.
And the Nets have principles, but they're not executing on them, or whether it's they're not wanting to execute on them, or it's a combination of both. I just think that the Nets were getting shots that they would want, and Kyrie Irving was scoring aplenty, but there was a third quarter stretch for him that I was just like, man, you can't just give these points away. There was a possession that he had, I think it was a Chetty Osman, the steal was given to him, and then he just stands there, and they get the transition easy bucket, and it's just like, all right, Kyrie, like, we get it. You scored 38 points, 14 to 24 from the field. Absolutely incredible offensively. There's no questions about that. There was
but how many points did he give up defensively? You know what I mean, Jack? And that's what everyone is like. I see on Twitter a lot of people are like hyped with Kyrie, 38 points. I pointed out to you, like, and you mentioned and you agreed with me, like, there is that possession and there's numerous other lazy possessions defensively. And at the end of the day, you can't play 4-on-5. And I said to you too, every time he misses a layup, he's the last one back and it's a 5-on-4 for the other team. And man, you're supposed to be a leader for this team. And I understand you're going through some things, but when you're on the court, you're expected to play to a certain standard, especially if you want to be a champion. And you talk about, you know, bringing a championship to this Nets franchise. You're not setting the tone defensively and the effort level from you is not there. Offensively, you turned it up in the fourth, cool. But, like, you have to set the tone. You're one of the best players in this team. And when you're not putting an effort defensively, it makes it that much easier for every other guy not to do it.
Yeah, and the thing is, he has done it before for this Brooklyn Nets team. He was doing it in early stages of the season. You know, he was showing defensive intensity, running back in transition. I was looking up for just some reason. I was rewatching the Utah Jazz game where Kevin Durant was out and it was Kyrie Irving scoring aplenty and then running back in transition and getting, you know, transition steals off passes from the Utah Jazz. And I'm just like, I was, because I remember we talked about it on the outlet when we were talking about the Brooklyn Nets and the issues that they had. And a lot of it was, who do we think is worse defensively? Is it Kai or is it DJ? And both of them are as bad as each other at certain points. But I was like, okay, well, let me see if I can find some film to back myself up and go, all right, Kyrie Irving can be good defensively. And that game showed me a lot. I didn't find like specific plays, but I was sort of just rewatching it. And his tone and his tenor seemed to be like, all right, I'm going to lock in here. I'm going to lead this team on both ends of the floor. If I'm going to get a bucket, I'm also going to get back and get a bucket and get downward defensively, fight through these screens and such. And look, there were just times, I think there was just, it was a lazy effort, Nick. I think it was just lazy. And there was few and far between moments of defense for maybe like a Jeff Green here and there. DeAndre Jordan got a block. Bruce Brown had his minor moments here and there. But everyone else was just poor. Poor, poor, poor. And again, championships aren't won in January, but championship habits need to start being built in January and beyond.
Yeah, it's when anything is hard defensively, whenever they have to fight through a screen, you know, sprint on a closeout, do something crispy, communicate at an extremely high level, it's just like they don't do it. They just kind of half-ass and go through the motions, and like things are just not crispy. And some of it, yeah, is cohesion and chemistry and not having a ton of reps. But again, Like, these are all professional NBA players, and sometimes the effort is really questionable. And, like, DeAndre is supposed to, quote-unquote, be a defensive anchor for the starting unit, and, like, at times he is just stuck in mud. Like, he looks like he's wearing Tim's. It's like Andre Drummond, like, dusted him on a couple plays, and I'm like, Andre Drummond's a talented player, but what are we doing here?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it just reminds me of the Big Shaq meme. I don't think you have the facilities for that big man. And it's basically DeAndre Jordan playing any semblance of defense. And it's just like, he finds his intensity and his athleticism when there's a lob from Kyrie Irving or James Harden. And it's just like, well, maybe get up defensively. Like, just jump for me, mate. Just jump for me on the board.
Rebounds and stop watching them in the sky.
So many Nets players wait for the ball to come to them, Nick. Like, and that's what Jared Allen does well, and he punished us. Like, it's just like, yeah, we know how good this guy is as a rebounder. I've called him one of the best rebounders in the league and one of the best offensive rebounders in the league. Andre Drummond is also one of the best rebounders in the league. You have two of the best rebounders on the same team. You are going to have to show intensity on that end of the floor for 48 minutes if you want to be in the game. And, Nick, this is a damning stat. 50-29 on the boards.
That's disgusting. That just can't happen. Like, and it's the same team you just played. You know what I mean? It's not like we're talking about, like, oh, hey, you play the Cavs and now all of a sudden, I don't know, the Sixers and Joel Embiid came to town and Joel Embiid just went to work. Like, you know, I can live with stuff like that, but, like, you're facing the same team. You're supposed to make adjustments, and, like, I think it goes back to maybe coaching a little bit, but also it's hard to blame the coaches when the effort level is so low.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Steve Nash had probably, I was probably more annoyed at what he didn't do in the previous game compared to this game. Like, you know, he let Landry Shamet do some things, and I'm just like, ah, come on, man. Like, he's making mistakes aplenty. Just throw some Tyler Johnson a bone here, or play Bruce Brown over him, because at least if Landry Shamet's giving you nothing offensively, at least Bruce Brown's going to give you something defensively. He did give away a few too many ticky-tacky fouls. I think some of them probably weren't necessarily warranted. But yeah, the coaching probably wasn't my issue, Nick, because we talk about, and we've talked about it probably a lot in, like, seasons past in relation to Kenny Atkinson. It's just like, all right, who is it on here? Is it on the coach or is it on the players? And a lot of the time, I will say that the responsibility goes down to the players. And yeah, a saying that I've sort of, an utterance that I've said a million times is like, the coach needs to give you the tools to succeed. And I think that he did that a lot. I think that there were times where I looked and I'm like, okay, here's a little bit of zone defense. But we did it for like two possessions and just went away from it, despite having a little bit of success with it. And I talked about it on Twitter, and it's just like the Nets could learn a thing or two about transition defense, about defensive intensity from this Cleveland Cavaliers team. And yes, they have a guy like Larry Nance, they have Jared Allen, they have Isaac Okoro, who are all above average, if not really elite defenders at their positions. But at the same time, they are also elite in terms of their mentality. They want to defend. They want to get out there. They want to make those steals. They want to get back in defense, and the Nets just don't. The Nets are lazy right now, Nick, and laziness can be fixed up, but it needs to be fixed up sooner rather than later, because right now they are getting found out. You can't win games by playing one end of the floor, and I've always said that, you know, offense is 60% of the game, but the Nets are playing, you know, maybe 55% of that capability offensively, and what, like 8% of the 40% on defense. It's yeah, there's just not enough, Nick. And I'm intrigued.
I got another
stat
for you though, Jack.
Sure.
Points in the paint, 70-46. 70-46. You just heard me gasp while you were talking, and you probably thought I was like talking about your take, but I just looked up the stat and I'm just like, yo, what are we doing here? Like, the Cavs are an elite 3-point shooting team. They had probably an outlier game the previous game, shot 50%. Like, yeah, you should be able to defend teams at the 3-point line without giving 70 points in the paint. We're not talking about like the Golden State Warriors or even like another great team like the Hawks or something, who, you know, they just have great 3-point shooting. They have some good inside out options. Like, the Cavs offensively really struggle, and the Nets made it as easy as possible. And a lot of that was just simple pick and roll offense.
Yeah. And what do you think the issue was there, Nick? Was it an effort thing? Was it not fighting through screens? Was it getting a step back too far? Was it DeAndre not tagging the roller? What were your thoughts, I guess, on the pick and roll defense? Because it's been an issue all season.
Yeah, I think there's just like some confusion possibly, but number one thing is not getting over the screen. You know, they're always chasing from behind, and then DeAndre's dropping, and then he's just constantly caught in no man's land where he's not actually pressing the shooter, but he's also not putting a body on Andre Drummond. And then like sometimes the weak side guy is supposed to tag Drummond, but the Cavs, I thought, did a pretty good job of running sets where there was essentially no weak side guy to tag Drummond or based on how they're doing their offense, but it just has to be better. Like, you just have to make guys earn more shots. And like, they literally just kept running the same play over and over again. And it felt like every time Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, or even Sexton getting an ISO, it felt like it resulted in a good shot for the Cavs, or they got to the free throw line. And it's just like, Colin Sexton's a good player and he's improving, honestly, obviously, but like, he's not the type of player that should ruin your defense. You know, we're not talking about Steph Curry. We're not talking about, you know, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Luka, you know, like all of the Bradley Beal, Dame Lillard. Like, we're talking about Colin Sexton. Like I said, really good player, maybe even a fringe all-star player, but he's not top five, top 10. You're going to be saying way more difficult challenge throughout the season. So it's definitely like a bad taste in your mouth. Obviously, like we've said, 2-game sample size, but still, you got to be better.
Yeah, you've got to be better, Nick, because 70 points to anyone in the paint is awful. Like, if you're going against Milwaukee Bucks, I think the Nets gave around 50, and 50 is bad. You want to give, like, 45 or less, around that sort of range, you know. And the Nets got to the paint a little bit more in the second half. I thought there was at least somewhat more of a purpose to sort of get there. And also, Nick, the free throw disparity, 32-17. You know, they were just giving fouls and fouls and fouls and fouls and fouls. It was just like, what are we doing here? A lot of it was just, and I think the laziness was like not doing certain things. And when they didn't do it, they were just like, all right, let's just hack here. Let's just give away a dumb foul. And it's just like, you need to play a full defensive possession. I think I said this on the outlet, that the Nets are playing like 12 seconds of defense, and then they bail it out by letting an offensive rebound or by just giving away a foul. And it's just like, you can't do that. Like, you have to be engaged for 24 seconds. And if you're not, then you're going to get found out against any team, whether it's the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Detroit Pistons. Any team in the league is going to punish you, because they make up for that by showing a little bit of hustle. And we've said before that every team is going to give the Brooklyn Nets their best shot. And because, you know, they're the villains, we're going to step up to them. You know what? We've got nothing to lose. The Brooklyn Nets have a lot to lose right now, and they are losing because they aren't responding. They aren't responding to what the other team is giving to them, and they aren't showing an ability to adjust on the fly. And some of that probably is coaching. And it's just like, I wanted to see more of the zone, Nick. It's just like,
yeah, this I wanted to see something different. Like, shit, the man-to-man doesn't work, or the switching doesn't work. Start trapping the hell out of this team. I don't care. Do something. Like, show me that you want to win the game. Like, I also, like, am a fan of, like, trying to trap a young team, because I think you can have success sometimes, especially if your straight-up defense isn't working. Maybe you can get lucky, force a couple turnovers, and it just feels like the Nets defense really does a whole bunch of nothing. They just play really vanilla, and it's tough. And, like, it's pretty easy. If I'm going against the Brooklyn Nets, I'm putting Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan in a pick-and-roll. And I'm probably going to end up getting a good possession. And it's that simple. And I don't know if there's like a pure fix for it at this time. Obviously, having another great, you know, rim protector in Kevin Durant as a weak side guy, and, you know,
Norville Pelt.
Yeah, or maybe he can come in and do something for the Nets. But I'm not really sure. I think that's definitely like an issue. And like the Kyrie thing, and I don't want to get back to it and constantly complain about him, but like you said, the defensive effort, it just fluctuates so much. It's just so sporadic. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it looks like he can, you know, he can be a defender on a championship team. And then other times I'm like really concerned about teams just attacking him and trying to get switches every single possession and going against him, because, you know, like, as bad as some of the other Nets are, they're at least somewhat competent and they put an effort and try to slow a guy down. Like Joe Harris, not extremely talented defensively, but he understands what he needs to do when he fights through stuff and he puts a lot of effort in, and it makes all the difference. And like, he can still get attacked, but at least he's putting in an effort and making their life harder instead of essentially just handing out buckets.
No, definitely. And look, the Nets had a lot of issues. You know, Kyrie Irving's defensive ones were probably the main one, but it was across the team. You know, DeAndre Jordan. It was just the lackadaisical, mentally, physically, in all respects. And yeah, you know, I want to see more zone. If it's just like, okay, because the Nets are currently lacking the ability to execute in terms of communication and in terms of just like making the hard switch quick and being quick mentally, being quick of mind, quick in your mouth, and just going, all right, okay, make this switch here. There were a couple of times where I did see, probably more so with the second unit, because you see that more with the second unit, where they show that extra effort, where Landry Shamet will get switched onto the post and Jeff Green's like, nope, you go out to the perimeter. And that's where I think Jeff Green is probably showing the most defensive leadership on this team, in the absence of Kevin Durant, especially. I think James Harden is doing enough, but I think James Harden is being passive in general.
Do you think James Harden is trying not to step on Kyrie Irving's toes? Like, that's a feeling that I'm getting, and I've defended Kyrie a ton on this podcast, but it just almost feels like everyone's tiptoeing around Kyrie Irving right now, given everything that's happened. And I feel like that's what's happening to James Harden, because he tried to force passes to him on numerous occasions.
Yeah, I thought that there was a lot of forced passes, and it probably happened more in the third quarter, because the first half, the turnovers weren't there, and then 8 turnovers in the third quarter was where it sort of started to all fall apart. In response to your question, Nick, I think maybe. I think that there is a feeling out process, as James Harden did allude to. I'm confident in it, but for me, again, I alluded, this is a stat that I'm going to keep looking at for him. 4 free throws for James Harden. James Harden is a guy that gets to the line like 50. I would say if we're to go back 5 seasons, who's had the most free throws in the league, it would definitely be James Harden. Yeah. I can't remember a game where he's had 5 free throws or less, Nick. And I think there were just times where it's just like, he can get a bucket. He's just like, all right, I got this guy on me and the 4 guys on the floor on the right side. I've got the weak side, basically empty. I'm going to drive to the hoop here. Do that all the time, man. Like, we need your offense. Like, we legitimately need it. Kyrie Irving's offense was there, and like, there's no question about his offensive mentality. His defensive mentality isn't there. James Harden, I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to seed and go, all right, Kyrie Irving's been here a bit longer than me. I need to help this guy out. I need to make sure that he's feeling himself on the offensive side of the floor, and then also get these guys going. He has the toughest position because he's playing as the point guard right now. He has to make sure everyone gets their own. And he's making nice kick-out passes to TLC, Landry Shamet, Jeff Green. And some of the times it's just like, you don't need to do that. Just drive on him. Just get a pick and roll with Jeff Green or DeAndre Jordan and drive and do your hacky thing. Trey Young's done it all season and he got back to it tonight. Just do it, man. Like, that's what we want from him. And he still hadn't, if you're looking at
the stats, he still had a really good game. And that's why I find so hard, to be so mad. And I get it. Fans are upset, but he's playing point guard right now. And he easily could have had 15 plus assists in this game if guys just hit open shots. And even a guy like Joe Harris missed some open threes that he typically knocks down. Like Landry Shamet, he just can't hit anything right now. But,
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I agree, Jack. I think the free throws is something that's really frustrating. And it's ironic because I tweeted out before the game, the Nets, I think, got a foul early on. I was like, oh, they should make this a habit, getting the bonus early on. That's what I talked about when they made the trade in the first place. There's no reason not to with the offensive talent they have. And it turns out the Cavs got into the freaking bonus every single quarter.
Yeah, and the time where the Nets were in the bonus, the Cavs were also in the bonus at the same time. So it was just but the Cavs did a better job of defending, whereas the Nets bailed them out, and that's why they had how many, we alluded to the stat earlier.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
If you have loved ones that rely on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. With Policy Genius, you could save 50% or more by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. First, head to policygenius.com. In minutes, Policy Genius will compare prices starting at as little as $1 a day. You might even be eligible to fast-track your coverage with a no-exam policy. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. If you have any questions, their team of licensed, independent experts is on hand to help. In fact, Policy Genius's award-winning service has a 5-star rating across thousands of reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Make today the day you cross life insurance off your list and get protection for your loved ones. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes. To get covered, head to policygenius.com today.
Yeah. But yeah, I think James Harden has the right mentality in wanting to be a good teammate and wanting to be a good floor general. But he also needs to realize that we need his offense. Yeah. We need him to be aggressive, and especially when he's out there with the second unit, because
no Kevin Durant.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. He needs to have 30 points or more. You know, it's simple as that.
19 points. Shots.
Yeah, and he had 14 tonight. And look, Jeff Green had 9, TLC had 9, Joe Harris had 9. He needs to be having 20. You know, he needs to have 20 or more and have a bit of balance like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant did at earlier points of the season. So look, he's going to find that balance. I'm pretty confident of that because we have seen it before. We know what he can be like as an offensive force. I think he's just seeing a bit. He's feeling it out, and you know he and he's eventually going to find that balance. I'm not necessarily as worried about that as other things that we've talked about on this podcast, but I want him to do it soon. I want to see James Harden have a 50-point triple double or whatever, and I don't care if Kyrie Irving has 10 shots or whatever, because Kyrie Irving, we don't have to worry about offensively because he knows how to just get his own. I want like the guys that have their issues to focus on those issues because we know what their strengths are. Kyrie Irving's weaknesses are his defense. Focus more on that at the end of the floor, my guy. We know you can get a shot from any single spot on the floor against any defender in the league. If you show us you can do something defensively and you get, you know, and you go 5 of 14 from the field, it's just going to be like, all right, well, at least we saw the defense there because we're not going to see consistency in the lack of offense because he just doesn't. He's always going to be there offensively. But yeah, I think Harden needs to be better. He needs to be better in his mentality. He needs to be more aggressive at just getting into the lane. Find and draw the contact that we know he can initiate quite easily, especially when the Nets are lacking for offense in that 25 run. I just think it's easy points. He knows how to get easy points, but he's not doing it. He's trying to find easy points for his teammates. And while I respect that, you know, what we need from him is to lead from the front offensively, be the offensive leader, especially in Kevin Durant's absence, as you alluded to, Nick.
Yeah, it's a really interesting situation. And like you said, it's almost hard to be mad at a guy for wanting to get his teammates going. But at the same time, you know, given some of the lack of offensive talent, you need him to kind of pick it up. I think the free throws are important. I thought there was a couple times where maybe he should have got free throws. And it's kind of funny that like, oh, now he's on the Nets and he doesn't get the same calls. It's like, okay. But
Kyrie Irving as well. I think it seems to me that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are two of the guys in the league because they don't flail as much as a lot of other guys. They don't get calls. And I'm not saying that it was a key distinguishing factor in the game, but there was a drive down on Colin Sexton, and Colin Sexton hacks like a mofo. Like that's how he plays defense. He's just like really fizzy. He's like Pat Beverly-esque in how he really toes the line, but he doesn't have the reputation of a Pat Beverly to get away with it. So I'm just like, all right, Kyrie Irving drived at him and got hit like a million times and still finishes only because he finished. If he didn't finish it, you probably still wouldn't have called the foul. And I think that that's one thing that the Nets need to be a bit louder about. And as you alluded to, Nick, Steve Nash needs to be louder about. He's, again, being way too passive. And because you look to your coach as the leader of the team, if you're going to show a level of passive nature, then it's going to be up to Kyrie Irving to get a tech out there and in that sort of respect. But I think that that's where one area that Steve Nash can easily change. Stand up a little bit. Do some Kenny Atkinson-style things. Go Hulk mode, my dude.
Yeah. I think he needs to press the refs a little bit because the Nets shot 5 free throws in the first half. Some of that was the Nets shooting a ton of threes, but also there was plenty of possessions where, like you said, they got hacked. I think some of it is that Kyrie and KD play such a finesse game, and there's a lot of like swipe fouls, and if they played with maybe a little bit more power, sometimes you end up getting the calls. But hey, that's what's kind of strange with the whole James Harden thing, why he's not getting calls. But hopefully that can change going to the next one, or maybe it's just kind of switching up the rotation a little bit. I'm not really sure, because like James Harden feels more comfortable as the playmaker, so maybe it's kind of getting all of his minutes with Kevin Durant in the next game and letting Kyrie just go to work with the second unit who's having straight scoring issues, you know what I mean, and just let him cook with them. Because, to be honest, he went 14-24, and I'd probably say at least 6 of those makes were, like, completely contested, difficult shots.
Yeah, and there were a couple of shots when the Nets were coming back where he does do hero ball a little bit too much. And it was just like, all right, man, we don't need the 18 footer there where we're down 12 with like 5 minutes left. That's where we need you to attack. You know, there's a point where we know you can hit those shots every now and then, but we need a higher percentage shot. And Kyrie Irving can get, you know, a bit ISO heavy and sort of in his own head. I'm like, all right, I can hit any shot here. It doesn't necessarily matter where it's from, but it's just like, well, we need the high percentage shots at this point of the game more than any other. We need to put the pressure on the defense, not bail them out. And then if there are those long sort of two-pointers, then it, you know, they generally lead to the long rebounds, and meaning that, like you alluded to, Nick, the poor transition defense. So, yeah, I think that... What did you think?
They played good transition defense against the Bucks. Like, one of the toughest teams in the league to play good transition defense again because of Giannis, because of Jrue Holiday, and all the weapons they have. But against the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's an issue.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But, I mean, you don't have your best player, and it hurts. The Brooklyn Nets, despite they have the big three and, you know, the health, the insurance of losing one of them, but we lost the one that you probably don't want to lose in saying that. And I agree with the decision. I'm not against it at all.
I was happy, to be honest.
Yeah. It's the most minutes I think he's played in 5 seasons. And, you know, a guy coming off an Achilles injury, and he's had a high minutes load. So I'm happy with the decision. And hopefully he's back for the Miami Heat game tomorrow. And we see hopefully a W in Kai and Kevin Durant coming out and showing beast mode. Like we know that he can. Nick, what did you think before we, I guess, get to some other stuff? What did you think of the starting lineup?
So we had Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and DeAndre Jordan.
Yep.
You know, I thought it was a little small, and I know people liked it offensively, but the Cavs are a relatively big team. It's tough. I mean, I could complain about every starting lineup at this point because, you know, there's always going to be some type of issue, but, you know, I thought it had okay moments. It's going to be small, and like, it just is going to have a lot of defensive issues. And Bruce Brown, you know, has his good moments and he also has some bad moments. So it's just like, Steve Nash still trying to find that kind of correct rotation. I think it's just kind of all over the place. And I don't think there's certain guys in the team that you can tell he just doesn't necessarily trust. And he just really doesn't trust that second unit right now. So like the starters and the bench is just kind of all over the place. And I think, like you said, losing Kevin Durant hurt so much because not only are the Nets, you know, shorthanded a little bit, but he's such a big piece of what they do on both ends of the floor. So it's just like, it's really tough to replace. And like, unless you get the 50-point game from a James Harden or a Kyrie Irving, or both guys kind of just go off, because at the other aspects of the game, the Nets just aren't winning right now.
One of those guys he doesn't trust, Nick, is Bruce Brown, despite having, you know, +5, the only starter who was positive in the +/-, still only had 23 minutes. Do you think that those minutes should have been jacked up for our boy Bruce?
Yeah, I think if you're missing energy and, you know, one guy who does consistently bring energy is Bruce Brown, you would think that you'd play him a little bit more. But I feel like Nash, like, gets too worried about offense sometimes. And I don't know if this is, like, his philosophy or maybe there's something Bruce Brown's doing on the floor that we don't notice. But it's like if they're having any type of issue where the other team goes on a run, like, his counter is more offense. You know what I mean? It's not more defense. It's like, you know, Steve, there's two ends of the floor. And I feel like Bruce Brown has a pretty big impact, not only on the defense, but rebounding is pretty important, too. He didn't have a huge game tonight, but he's a guy that actually boxes people out.
Yeah, and he's a guy that actually jumps for rebounds. You know, we don't have any of those guys
anymore. And fights for loose balls.
And does, like, you know, he guards you full court some possessions, and he got us some steals. He got us some 2 steals and 2 blocks for him is immense in 23 minutes. And, you know, he's like, you know, he has some quotes like, you know, we didn't show up today and all these sort of things. It was just like, well, you play your best defender probably on the roster right now in the absence of Kevin Durant. You know, Jeff Green is great, but I do think that Bruce Brown provides a bit more tangible energy on that end of the floor, and it's more impactful. Like, you feel his presence defensively, probably a little bit more than Jeff Green. It's probably negligible at the end of the day, but I don't understand.
Jeff Green's probably a better communicator.
Definitely, he's a great leader, and he has to be, you know, at the sort of back line of that defense. Yep. But Bruce Brown just gives you the effort, and you see it, like 2 steals and 2 blocks from him. And in 23 minutes, TLC had, you know, and I get the 3-ball was falling, but he was -16 in his minutes, Nick. Like, and Joe Harris was -18. And I just, like, it pains me to say it, but take 5 minutes away from those two guys, and Bruce Brown needs to play 30 minutes. Like, I just don't understand. I think that we saw the stat, like, you know, the Nets are, like, what, 6-3 when Bruce Brown plays 20 minutes or 30 minutes or more, something like that, and they're 3-6 without him. you know, we saw it's just like you could feel his impact out there. And like he sometimes it's just like take that corner three, but then he gets the floater. He just knows his own game. And I think that he knows how he can impact the game. And like, you know, when he got the foul on Torian Prince, I didn't think it was a foul either. Hearing him say all ball. And it's just like, the ref goes to him to, you know, you hit him in the face. And he goes to Torian Prince, did I hit you in the face? Did I hit you in the face? And it's just like, I want to see that. I want to see a little bit of grunt from this team. We're playing too pretty, Nick.
Yeah, and he's a competitor. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to win every possession he can win, and I appreciate that. You know what I mean? As a fan, that's the type of player you want to see. I think Bruce Brown, like, one thing he can do offensively that would, you know, provide a lot of impact would just be set more off-ball screens. Like, I think that's it's a way for him to have an impact, because I will say Larry Nance cheated off him a lot, and that led to a couple steals for Larry Nance, because, to be honest, like you said, Bruce Brown doesn't want to shoot that three ball. And there's no reason for him to really shoot at. I think he's maybe hit one or two this season. So it's kind of finding his groove offensively too and what works. But like I said, Steve Nash gets too worried about the offense being pretty instead of just kind of letting it go to work, because you have two guys that can score offense on their own without the other four guys on the floor. Like James Harden and Kyrie Irving are literally capable of putting up points by themselves. So it's kind of finding that mix. And I feel like TLC has kind of lost some of his defensive energy. You know, it just doesn't quite feel the same out there in terms of, or maybe it's just in comparison to seeing a real defender like Bruce Brown. I'm not sure.
No, I agree. It seems to me that like he's such a foul giver. Like he gives away fouls way too easily.
And he grabs a lot. Even honestly, I saw him not get called for about five fouls today. I saw him trying to box out Jared Allen, and he's like grabbing his ass, like grabbing his jersey. I'm just like, bro, that you don't need to do that to box somebody out.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Nick. So, yeah, I think he certainly has lost a step there, but, you know, he's a hot and cold player. He's Katy Perry, you know, especially with that three ball, and that defense seems to be more cold than hot, you know. It seems to me every second game we get TLC hit 50% of his threes, but also it's like Kyrie Irving. What are you giving us on the defensive side of the ball? And TLC was put into the starting lineup early in the season to be the guy, once Spencer Dinwiddie was injured, to provide us defense, but be the defensive stopper on Trae Young. And while he wasn't amazing, you know, there was the effort and there was the mentality, the right mentality. And it seems to me right now with his bench role, it's just like, well, the Nets lack a lot of offense coming off the bench. I need to be this gun. I need to put up my threes. And he had some nice effort plays as well off his miss. You know, he had a nice reverse layup as well. So, look, it's you give and you take with the TLC experience and our entire bench for that matter. The depth is certainly gone. You know, Torian Prince only plays well against his former teams, whether it's the Atlanta Hawks or now the Brooklyn Nets. He's not gonna have a good game for the rest of the season, I don't think. But in saying that, you know, him, Jared Allen was feasting on us as well, and Joe Harris wasn't having the best night, and it's probably because he was dead, because Jared Allen absolutely murdered him.
Yeah, he did. He went to work on him with that dunk, and I think Larry Nance called James Harden too, so that wasn't great, and that's going to happen when you play undersized so much and you switch so much, especially when it's not necessary. So it's tough out there for Joe, and it's like he's still doing a lot of the same things that he does, and it's just like I just feel like he feels a little bit out of sync with the offense at times just because it's just been so kind of star-centric at different points. But getting back to the bench, Jack, that's a real issue right now. The bench is not competent. It's not an NBA-level bench, and they really need to make some upgrades right now and try to find guys that fit in. And you mentioned TLC, and he's so sporadic that one night he looks like one of the better bench players in the NBA, and then some nights you question if, you know, he should be getting minutes. And I'm not saying tonight was that type of night, but it just kind of goes to show you the type of players they have. And what do you think about him and his role moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's going to get minutes, Nick, because there's not many other options. No, you're going to give him Chris Chioza. Maybe, I wouldn't mind maybe trying out Tyler Johnson. You know, he got some garbage time with Chioza tonight. I don't know. He is going to be as bipolar as he has ever been. Consistency is what you want out of your role players. You know, you need to star in your role, as Tristan Thompson did say, and we don't have a lot of guys doing that. You know, Joe Harris kind of does that, but even he has lost a semblance of his consistency of late. I'm confident that he'll get it back. You know, shoot.
I think he's just kind of more so out of sync.
Yeah, and look, like the shot is going to fall. Like he was 2 of 7, so for the past two games, I think 4 of 14. So you know, it's a 2-game stretch. You know, since the insertion of James Harden, I think he's finding his own. Whether it's going to be with the stars, whether it's going to be with the bench, I don't know. But it's going to be an acclimation process for him, and I think he's going to figure it out because you know shooters do have cold stretches, and he's still one of the best shooters in the NBA, as we saw a stat the other day. So he's going to be fine. But yeah, as you alluded to, TLC and Landry Shamet, those are two guys that we need to contribute. We literally need them. Like we need it, and I get it. Like you know, it's probably. You know, if you had like a Trevor Ariza there or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or whoever else it might be, it's just like, okay, these guys have been around the wings before. But Landry Shamet, I feel like it bewilders me a little bit because he's shown that he can be a capable offensive player and provide you a spark of some sort. But he's lost his powers, Nick, and really sucks because I think he can be, and he has shown to be so much better.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like sometimes you see the three-point shot come out of his hand and you already know it's going to miss. It's like off. You know, it's just something's not right. He's not comfortable. And like I said, maybe it's something with a roll, but he got, you know, 18 minutes tonight and he got 6 shots up, 5 threes, couldn't hit any of them. It's tough. I mean, are you losing any hope for Landry Shamet or do you think he'll be able to turn around at some point this year?
Look, Nick, I'm hoping I'm the optimist in me that he can contribute because he's done it in basically every other team that he's played on. For the Los Angeles Clippers, he was a really capable role player. For the Philadelphia 76ers, a really capable role player. And it's not like we're asking him to do anything that he hasn't done. If anything, we're sort of narrowing his role to what it probably was more in Philadelphia than what it was in Los Angeles. And that should only be helping him. So I'm not 100% sure. It's a lot of the slander online, I've been guilty of it as well. It sucks. And also the news coming out, Brian Windhorst the other week that we alluded to where, you know, the Nets did try to shop him. Maybe he heard that. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. But he heard that and he's just like, man, that kind of sucks. You know, does this team want me? And maybe Sean Marks needs to have a word to him. Steve Nash needs to have a word to him and go, look, you are with this team. We need you. And I think that sometimes... You know, we alluded to like Steve Nash has this high level of emotional intelligence. This is what that man management, you know, he's a player's coach. This is where you need to step up and try and get the most out of these role players. We know you're a superstar. We know you can relate to James Harden and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. How is it that you can be like Steve Kerr, like Greg Popovich, like these guys that know how to relate and get the most out of everyone on their roster, like Phil Jackson in years of old. So I think that that's one thing. That Steve Nash needs to do a little bit better. Sean Marks needs to do a little bit better. You know, we heard Sean Marks come out and say that he was communicating with Caris LeVert regularly about the fact, look, you might get traded, mate. And look, I respect that transparency, but I think Landry Shamet and a lot of these role players need that transparency. I think TLC is fine. I think he knows what his role. He just needs to execute it. Landry Shamet maybe needs a little bit of a rev up or maybe needs a little bit of a pat on the bum and go, look, we need you on this team. Yes, we tried shopping you. Yes, we wanted to keep Jared Allen. But right now, that's done, mate. And we want you and we need you to win this championship. And maybe that's what it's going to take for him to contribute to this team going forward. I really, really hope he can pull it together, Nick. And the optimist in me wants him to even more so.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, all the evidence points to him hopefully bouncing back and becoming, you know, a good three-point shooter again because he's really good. He hit a lot of tough threes over his short career so far. So, I mean, it would be pretty impactful given the players on this roster. I think another guy on the bench that just kind of shown that, you know, maybe he's just not ready for NBA minutes is probably Reggie Perry. You know, there's a couple of just rookie mistakes, and it's just kind of a constant thing. And what you need him to do with the lack of talent on that second unit, it's going to be tough. Unless, you know, he's playing with Jeff Green consistently and the other center isn't great. If it's like, you know, a mediocre center, you know, Jared Allen might be the best backup center in the league if, you know, you even want to call him a backup. So that's obviously going to be a mismatch. But I feel like at times Reggie Perry just kind of just doesn't look the part. You know, I know it was kind of a honeymoon phase and everyone kind of hyped him up. And he looks a little bit more like a second round pick rookie this year.
Yeah. And I think as a big, probably more than any other, in that position, it takes the most time to make an impact on the floor. We're seeing, you know, issues with the second pick in Golden State and James Wiseman having his inconsistencies. You know, I think it's the hardest position on the floor to make an impact because you are asked so much, especially defensively on that end of the floor. Yes, it's easy to get some boards. Yes, it's easy to get some putbacks. And, you know, he's done that a couple of times. But, you know, I was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast with Mike Schmitz, and he said that the Nets did get a little bit of a steal. You know, he has an ability to make a real impact. You know, he's really aggressive, but it can sometimes be a little bit irrational and sort of get caught up in his head sometimes. And we've seen
that. You can see that a little tonight.
And we saw it, I think, as well the other night when we saw Kyrie Irving tell him, all right, mate, dude, just chill, all right? It's fun. When it's a one, especially, I think, and to have a semblance of stability about it. And look, he's a young kid. You know, he's getting it together. And I think he's going to be a good NBA player, but on a championship team, I'm not sure if he's got it right now. But he's getting the reps. And against a team that's got some pretty damn good bigs, one that we know very intimately, and also Andre Drummond, look, there aren't going to be many worse matchups than those two guys.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's also, like you mentioned, it's tough because you're in a ton of actions defensively, especially when they're trying to attack, you know, in the pick and roll, you know, with Kyrie Irving or whatever's on the floor, because the Nets don't necessarily have amazing on-ball defenders. So it's putting more pressure on a guy like that. And it's kind of learning the experience of like how much you can cheat in certain situations. And like you said, that's tough to ask for a first-year player, especially a guy that's not like, doesn't have that elite athleticism, that recovery speed that can help make up for a lot of mistakes. Like Jared Allen, like when he was a rookie, he got away with a lot of stuff because he was so damn quick. You know what I mean? And he could just step back, and even plays now, he could cheat probably more than a lot of bigs in the league just because of how gifted he is on, you know, with the athleticism and the length that he does have. But, you know, if you wanted to miss Jared Allen, this game made you.
Oh, bro, this, and yes, Network playing like tribute videos and stuff. And again, that dunk on Joe Harris was just filthy. He's smiling going down the floor after making all these plays. And it's just like, man, I'm happy for you, Jared. I really want you back, my guy. I'll give up pretty much any player on this roster right now for you, pretty much, my dude. And look, he's going to have great success going forward. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, they got a good one. And he's going to have some great success with them. And he already is. He's going to continue to play like an absolute baller. Love Jared Allen. Much love for him. And Torian Prince, you know, continue doing your thing. Hopefully you can have consistency, my guy. But damn, I wish he was doing it for the Brooklyn Nets.
I've seen a trade if that was the case.
Yeah, true. And Nick, we didn't see any Tyler Johnson tonight. Some people were clamoring for some TJ minutes. What about you?
I like Tyler Johnson. I like the energy. I like the effort that he brings. And I'm not saying he needs to be a consistent part of the rotation, but he's also a guy you can plug and play. Hey, we're having a bad stretch. We need some defense. We need some effort. Throw Tyler Johnson out there. You know what I mean? I think he also would be a nice compliment to James Harden, kind of almost in like an Austin Rivers type role, where like he doesn't necessarily have to do much, but occasionally he might create some offense, might shoot a, you know, a weird three and make it. Like, that's what I could see Tyler Johnson doing. So hopefully he can kind of, you know, get some minutes and give that team a spark. I mean, and I like his personality. He seems like he's liked by a lot of his teammates too.
Yeah, I'd like that comparison to Austin Rivers, Nick, because, you know, we know what James Harden can do with role players, because, you know, the Houston Rockets have basically surrounded him with that and a couple of superstars here and there, and PJ Tucker and sometimes Clint Capella or Dwight Howard. You know, they've done that before. So it's just that our role players aren't being the, obviously, we were asking them to do more, lay some off-ball screens and not just sit out there on the perimeter and shoot threes. But in saying that, they should, you know, Landry Shamet and TLC, sometimes you get hit and miss out of them. But Tyler Johnson, give him the opportunity. You know, we
does a good job getting to the free throw line too occasionally.
Yeah, and look, he can create a lot of shots for himself as well. And you know, he's pesky, he's athletic. It's not like Landry Shamet's giving you a lot offensively and defensively for that matter. So look, experiment with it. You know, I think that what Steve Nash needs to realize is that the early points of the regular season are where you figure out, okay, what can I find out about the players that I have, and can these guys contribute to meaningful minutes when it does matter? And the Nets are obviously still have a lot of issues to sort out, and it's going to take quite a while. We're, you know what, like a fourth or a fifth away into the season, and there's a lot of issues still that are pertaining, and they're the same issues that we thought heading into the season. So I think he needs to go, all right, we know what we've got out of our superstars. What are we going to get out of our role players? We need to give them some opportunities here. We also need to have that balance and go, oh, okay, well, we can't give them too much leeway, but we've got at least a couple of guys we can trust. You know, I don't want to see for many games for the rest of the season, unless TLC is hot offensively, like hot, not just like 3 of 7 from three hot, but like 5 of 7 from three, and playing some at least average defense, he should not get more minutes than Bruce Brown.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. Dan, just kind of looking at the roster, I have a question for you. And obviously, we were pretty critical of the team and the rebounding department, points in the paint. But like looking at it, the amount of guards that they played tonight is just kind of ridiculous. Like if you look through the lineup, they started 4 guards. You have Joe Harris, you have James Harden, you have Bruce Brown, you have Kyrie Irving, you have Landry Shamet. And in my opinion, TLC really was drafted as a guard. He has maybe a small forward body if you want to convince yourself that. But like, it's kind of already putting yourself at a huge disadvantage. And obviously some of that's missing Kevin Durant, but like they need to get some bodies. And I know I've been someone on Twitter preaching patience, but like they desperately need like at least another forward for the roster.
Definitely. You know, the loss of Torian Prince, you know, I thought he was a decent rebounder for this team. And it was
I'd
one
even
of the
like
things
to see Dan Rodions at this point.
Yeah, look, we need a body, Nick. You know, we need a body. It's almost like the Orlando bubble. You know, it's just like the point guard nets, the guard nets. There's some shooting guards, there's some point guards, and there's a center. Right now, that's similar to what the roster is right now. Obviously, those guards are much more talented. And James Harden, you know, he plays as a four defensively a lot of the time. He's really good in the post, but you know, he doesn't jump for boards. And, you know, we got out-rebounded. You know, you look at the likes of everyone else on the roster. Larry Nance Jr., 10 rebounds. Andre Drummond, 16 rebounds. Jared Allen, 6 rebounds. Dylan Windlass, 6 rebounds. You know, we had one guy in double. We didn't have anyone in double figure, sorry. Joe Harris was our best rebounder, Nick, with 7. DJ had 4.
Yeah, and he played 25 minutes. And I think, you know, there was just too many possessions where the ball just went past his face. And, like, that's another person that needs to get kind of lit up by somebody. I said Kyrie Irving needs to get talked to about his defensive effort. Same thing needs to happen to DeAndre Jordan on the boards. Like, you're on this team. You're getting $10-plus million a year. And, you know, really
rebound.
Exactly. Like, I know that you're not going to magically become athletic again and be a great defender, but really you can still rebound without a ton of athleticism. Look at a guy like Ed Davis for us a couple years ago. Not a great athlete. He just fought and he was strong. DeAndre's a freaking bigger dude than him. And he's supposed to be here to be a rebounder. 4 rebounds. And I wish I had the stats in front of me about how many offensive rebounds were grabbed while he was on the floor.
It'd be a lot, Nick. It'd be a lot. Andre Drummond had more offensive rebounds than he did. Jared Allen had 2 offensive rebounds. Isaac Okoro had 2 offensive rebounds. Larry Nance Jr. had 2 offensive rebounds. Look, if DeAndre Jordan is going to be so poor in one area of the floor, he needs to give you something else, not just be a net negative everywhere. Like, you have 4 turnovers, my dude. You lead the team in turnovers. You have more turnovers than James Harden and Kyrie Irving. What is that?
He can't catch the ball either. It's so crazy. Like, there was a pass by Joe Harris in this game where he threw a beautiful pass, just straight chest pass, maybe had a little heat on it. Straight up hit him in the hands and bounced off. Luckily, it hit Isaac Okoro, so it was the Nets' ball. But it's just like, man, the center position drop-off is huge. Like, I mentioned to you before, I don't know if I said on-air or off-air. Like, if they were able to keep Jared Allen and make this trade, I think the Nets would probably be favorites because he's that much better than DeAndre Jordan, and he covers up so many more areas. And it's like, I wish we could have a mulligan and try to figure something out and get Jared Allen back on this team, because it's almost funny to the extent is, like, the Rockets didn't even want Jared Allen. You know what I mean? It was like they need to get the extra pick and they need to get off Torian Prince's contract, where it's like, man, could we have like been a little bit more patient or tried to figure something else out where we could have kept Jared Allen? Because it would have been such a giant impact for this team and their outlook moving forward. And obviously the roster's not done and maybe they can add a good center to this team. But we've talked about it before. They're very limited in the assets that they do have.
Yeah, we heard that the JaVale McGee rumors heat up a little bit. Look, I don't think JaVale McGee solves a lot of the issues, but he at least gives you a semblance of competency. You know, Norvell.
You think he's better than DeAndre Jordan now? I probably do.
Dude, he's like 10 times better than DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan is not a starter in this league. Like, he is. Like, Dwight Howard is better than him. Like, yep. There is so many centers in the league. Like, DeAndre Jordan is verging on Alex Len territory. That's how bad he is right now. And, like, yeah, he had a great game against the Milwaukee Bucks. It doesn't take away from that. But he also was, like, that was the position where he wasn't rebounding at all. And he was just staying back, like, 5 feet in front of the rim and was just allowing Giannis to do nothing. And Giannis made him look good in a lot of respects. And he is a good post defender still. But, you know, Andre Drummond was just like, okay, last game, this guy was better on me in the post. I'm going to do a little bit more. And Andre Drummond by far outplayed him. You know, and Reggie Perry obviously is Reggie Perry.
And even some of the things on Andre Drummond, it was like simple things of DeAndre not having like fundamentals. Like he was having the wrong hand up. You know what I mean? Like if Drummond's coming across you and he's trying to shoot a hook shot and your arm is down, like it's going to be easy. Like as somebody who's played basketball and is, you know, I'm like 6'3", you're 6'3" as well. Like you go against people, like the average human is typically smaller than you. So you're used to working in the post. So like if you're giving me that shot, like I'm feeling extremely comfortable. Andre Drummond is playing basketball 100 times more than me. He's dealt with a lot bigger bodies than I've ever had to deal with. And DeAndre just made it too easy for him. He gave him space to shoot a hook shot in the paint. Like that's Andre Drummond's go-to move. Like what are we doing?
Yeah, look, Woj in his piece on Norvell Pell alluded to this. They hope Pell can provide a measure of rebounding and shot blocking depth to an offensive juggernaut desperate to tighten up defensively. Desperate is right, Woj. I'm sure Sean Marks is like, dude, you better use the word desperate here because we are desperate right now. We're on our knees praying for someone to get us a rebound on this team because we're not relying on DeAndre Jordan and a rookie. You know, I get Reggie Perry has an out. He's played 5-10 games in his life.
He's the freaking 57th overall pick, and he's on a two-way deal. Like,
yeah, that's it. He has an out, but DeAndre Jordan, you don't have an out because we need you, and you are giving us nada.
Yeah, Pell is interesting just because like he will be able to block some shots, rebound the ball, and catch some oops. But talking to Alec, who's one of our guys at OTG, he's a co-host of Always Something in Philadelphia. He talked about him not really having a ton of switchability. He doesn't have much range. So it's really just like block shots, rebound. I think he should be able to catch some oops, but like there could be plenty of issues in terms of defensive communication. And then he's also kind of a fouler.
Yeah, look, I was surprised at the signing, Nick, and I'm not sure why Dwayne Dedman wasn't, you know, reached out to. And I think that maybe he's been blackballed by the league in some sort of way.
Or he might, you know, typically like a player who hasn't signed might be dealing with some type of personal issue that not public. And the teams know because they know his agent, but it's not like we're going to make a story of Dwayne Dedman dealing with something because why do that?
Yeah, possibly, because at the end of the day, Dwayne Dedman is a better player than Norvell Pell. And yeah. I think Dwayne Dedman would probably be on an NBA team, possibly. I
did hear there were some like locker room and effort concerns about Dwayne Dedman and his exit from Sacramento. That could be something with it, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's probably some red flags on him, but I still think that whether it's him, JaVale McGee, or whoever, but the Nets need actual bodies to contribute. And look, there might be some better guys out there than Norvell Pell, but if he can prove us wrong and block everything in sight and be like a light version of Mitchell Robinson, then cool. You know, you play 20 minutes and you get 5 fouls, but you have 5 block shots, I'm cool with that. You know, we're probably questioning right now, Nick, that he could be the best center on the roster. And that's a damning, damning thing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Nick Claxton could be the best guy in the roster. I'm holding up hope for Nick Claxton, like that he could be some type of savior because he, in the perfect world, he fills so many needs. And I know it's like kind of crazy. He's a second year player, but we saw some flashes of him last year. But he plays with the energy, toughness, and swag that the Nets team really needs. Like that young energy that Colin Sexton has. The Nets just
Jared Allen brought it as well.
Yeah, Jared Allen brought it. I don't think he even has it the same level of Nick Claxton has it though. Like Nick Claxton just has kind of like almost a badass mentality. It's just the way he rubs you on the court. Like when he stepped on the NBA court, he did not give a shit who he was going against. Like we saw him early on in his career clamp up CJ McCollum, clamp up Devin Booker on switches, block shots, throw down dunks. And like, that's the type of shit that the Nets really need. Like they really need a Nick Claxton right now. And I'm not trying to put all the pressure on this young player that he's going to save the Nets, but for a bench unit, he could give them some major spark. And the defensive potential with Nick Claxton is really high. Like, he's a guy that had maybe not the same level of defensive potential of Jared Allen, but you also make an argument that Clax is switchier. You know what I mean? Because he showcased that he's a little thinner in frame, but I really want to see Nick Claxton. I would love if he was healthy right now. I don't know. Maybe he's going to take Caris LeVert's spot in my heart on this Nets roster, but I really could go for some Nick.
Yeah, we definitely need some Nick. Clax, come save us, my dude. Yeah, I don't need to add anything to that, Nick. I'm a big Claxton stan as well, as is a lot of Nets Twitter, but it's one game, Nick. We try to maintain a semblance of objectivity, and the Nets also do have the $5.7 million DPE for Spencer Dinwiddie as well. Spencer wasn't necessarily too happy about it posted to Instagram, but yeah.
I saw someone tweet, actually Alex Sternum tweeted something out from the CBA saying that technically Spencer could still return even if he does recover, since the injury is expected to keep him out the whole year, which is the most likely scenario. So I think maybe Spencer needs to check out the CBA real quick and realize that, hey, it might be okay.
He's representing himself as well, so he should know these things right now. But we saw some videos of him as well recovering and doing different exercises. So that's really cool to see. Hopefully he's back playing basketball in some form. And hopefully it's for the Brooklyn Nets at the latter points of this season. But they could use Spencer Dinwiddie. They could use Nicholas Claxton. Nick, we could use anyone on this team right now. But
I ask you a really hard question, like a super hard question? And it's short-sighted, obviously. This is more long-term. If the Nets continue with this amount of issue, like defensively, and they lack the type of positional players, do you think they'd have to consider trading Joe Harris for another role player?
Yeah, look, I think it's Joe Harris or it's Kyrie Irving. I think Kyrie Irving is the one that trends on Twitter. It's the one that gets talked about on podcasts. You know, I've seen people bring up, you know, a trade with New York for Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson. And
yeah, that guy's in my DMs too.
Yeah, look, it happens. It happens. But I think that I do understand why it is there. But Joe Harris also, you lose a semblance of your three-point shooting and a semblance of your offensive identity. So unless you are getting back, you know, really capable defenders in return, then you don't do it. But, you know, Joe Harris is one of the – any team would clamor to have him, even on the contract that he's on right now. You know, he's performing –
it's almost a benefit that the number is so high for the Nets.
Yeah, no, definitely, because you can get some guys out there, but I hope it doesn't come to that, Nick. Hopefully, like, there is just some role players out there. The Nets can get it together themselves. They establish some form or a semblance of a defensive identity, because, look, the best defensive teams in the league, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers are doing it in their sleep. That's just because they have great defensive talent and great defensive leadership.
And great basketball IQ. A lot of intelligent players in that team.
Yeah, incredible. And the Nets do have that. Like, the Nets have a really smart basketball team, so they should be able to, you know, establish some form of identity on that end of the floor, but they just haven't. And some of that is just they don't have the bodies that a lot of other teams do. But, you know, the Miami Heat, you know, they just have this culture, this mentality, and an incredible level of coaching. You know, Jacques Vaughn, like, let the man, like, go, all right, let me do some things defensively. Because it seems to me that, like you alluded to, Nick, the offense is overriding the defense in so many different aspects of play. And is Ime Udoka, is Jacques Vaughn being allowed to have their say and input? I'm sure they are, but if they were, I would think that we'd probably have a bit better of a defensive identity and a little bit more of a flexible defensive identity in saying that too.
Yeah, and I think also, like, some of the turnovers are just leading to super easy points, and that just, like, brings down some of the defensive energy too, and then it also puts them in a bad transition thing. I actually saw a conversation happening between Steve Nash, Udoka, and Jacques Vaughn, and I was assuming it was about defense, so it is kind of interesting in seeing how they can figure stuff out. It'd be kind of fun to see the zone tomorrow against Miami, you know what I mean, because Miami runs the zone so much too, and that's something the Nets are going to see a lot too. But Jack, anything else you want to touch on? Obviously, we'll have a show again tomorrow after the Heat game, and hopefully the Nets can bounce back. And I don't care if they win the game. I just want to see them play hard.
I mean, I want them to win the game, Nick. I think it's almost crucial that they do. And I did put out a tweet earlier in the day saying, like, you know, point differential is generally a decent indicator of a team's form and where they are in terms of that. And the Nets were top five there after tonight. I'm not sure if they're yeah. sticking around. You know, they were there with, like, the likes of the Bucks and the Lakers and the Clippers. And I think that the Nets are one of the best teams in the league, and they should be. But right now, they're not playing like it, and they need to work some things out. And one thing the zone does do is you do it against teams that can't shoot really well. The Miami Heat don't shoot really well.
Tyler Hero's going to be out.
Tyler Hero is also out for an extended period. And, you know, the Cavs don't shoot really well. And when we did do the zone, again, I alluded to it earlier in the pod, but I want to see, you know, more actions on both sides of the floor. It seems to me that we get caught up in just reading and reacting on both ends of the floor rather than going, all right, let's do this. Let's do this. And, you know, I know that the one thing that stuck out to me is like LeBron James saying last season, he's like, you know what, we never lose two games in a row. That's always our mentality. We don't let that happen. And I think that that needs to happen. It's just like, you know, lessen that mentality and go, all right, we're not letting, you know, we're getting at least one stop out of two. You know, 50% of the time, we're getting a stop here. We're getting the board and we're finishing the possession. You know, just these little things, I think, behind the scenes. Like, we heard Jeff Green earlier in the season go, like, we need to get it from our defense to our offense. And it started and then it got lost along the way. You know, there's a lot of issues, Nick, and we are given the opportunity to be able to see them in person, 48, not in person, but 48 minutes of it, game after game after game, and there hasn't been a lot of improvement there, but hopefully it does happen, and hopefully the Miami Heat is where it does begin to happen.
Yeah, I agree, Jack, and I think Kevin Durant, hopefully from a leadership perspective, comes out and sets the tone. Do you think there's a chance we could see Kyrie Irving rest tomorrow?
Maybe. I don't think he's going to want to. I honestly, he didn't play that many minutes tonight. Was it something like 31 or something or 32?
Yeah, I think like 32, 33, nothing too. Yeah, they're actually 30 minutes, so nothing too crazy. But he did play 48. Yeah, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I think his conditioning is okay, and I think he's going to want to. But look, we need to eventually figure it out with the three superstars. So I hope he does play, because then it allows us to actually go, all right, reps. We can have some more reps and we can take away some things, whether it's from the offense or the defense or both. So hopefully the Nets bounce back tomorrow, Nick, and we get on our winning ways.
Yeah, I'd love to see them come out with just a dominant first quarter effort and just really set the tone and just, you know, and you said, Jack, we need to win every possession. And like, obviously you do need to do that. But I think the Nets need to make the game simpler, okay? And make sure they win every quarter. That's an easy start. Hey, we're going to win the first quarter. We're going to win the second quarter. We're going to win the third quarter. We're going to win the fourth quarter. And at the end of the day, we're going to win by 20. And that's what they were doing early in the season. They were winning every single quarter, or they'd lose one quarter and they'd dominate the other three. And that needs to happen. It's okay to play one bad quarter, but you need to make sure you're coming with the heat. And also, third quarters are an issue. Like, that needs to not be a thing. You know, this happened tonight. I think it happened in the Cleveland game. And you need to come out with that extra effort and be like that Golden State team that really just dominated third quarters and put teams to sleep, because you have that type of offensive talent and they should be doing that on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's what happened to the Nets of old a lot. You know, the third quarters we'd get blown out. And, you know, we're not that team anymore. We've got some goddamn superstars. And, yeah. In a lot of Aussie vernacular and Aussie sports, they call it the premiership quarter, the third quarter, the championship quarter, I guess, to translate it to basketball terms. So, yeah, the Nets need to be better in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, in every quarter. Let's get back to playing some winning basketball, get those championship habits going.
Yeah, 100%, Jack. And just a quick quote that I actually saw via our guy Matt Brooks, and this is Kyrie Irving saying through a smile, "We don't want to be flipped a switch team. We don't." So, that's pretty much saying that they want to be the team that we just talked about. They want to be the team that wins big and doesn't have to be down 10 or 14 in the fourth quarter and flip the switch and try to come back all the time, because it takes a ton of energy and it's not setting great championship habits. But anything on that, Jack, before we get out of here?
No, I think all the right things are said by our players, by our coaches. And it's just like, all right, it almost makes it more frustrating, because it's like, you know what the problems are, fix them. But it's easier said than done.
Yeah, it's not 2K where you can just do it all yourself and make it all kind of worked out. But Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks to everybody for listening. You can find us on all streaming platforms.
If you have a family relying on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. That's where Policy Genius comes in. In minutes, Policy Genius could save you 50% or more simply by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. To save on life insurance and get protection for you and your family, head to policygenius.com today.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.